Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Oh, no! Oh, it's everywhere!
What have you done?
Oh, I've just shit myself.
Oh, don't worry.
Oh, why was anyone going to take me seriously as a filmmaker? I'm covered in shit.
Well, you want to contact Actor Film Project. They help people who are from people who are...
What are you trying to say? Spit it out.
Hang on. It's a smell. The smell's really affecting me. Her Film Project help people who are underrepresented in film. And so far as I know, no one's admitted to shitting themselves and made of making a film at the same time.
Oh, what, you mean that I have to sit around this the whole time?
Well, yeah.
Oh, all right then. At Her Film Project.
Yeah. Well, listen, I'm going to have to go because it smells awful.
Hello, welcome to yet another edition of Film Fandango, the film podcast, where a man who is me, Marek Larwood, goes to the cinema with a friend. They watch the film, they eat popcorn, they occasionally look over at each other when something amuses them both, and then they go to a house and talk about it. That is what's going to happen. And today's guest, I mean, normally it's presented by David Reed, but he's on paternity leave and he's had a lovely daughter. So let's say congratulations again. 3, 2, 1.
Congratulations.
Who's that?
Ooh.
It's my friend, filmmaker, Paul Allen. Hello, Paul.
Hello, Marek.
I suppose you should explain how we know each other.
School and growing up together in the Isle of Wight.
I was best friends with Paul's older brother at school in the Isle of Wight, and Paul was friends with my younger brother, and we used to share many a bus journey home from Sundown High School to Bembridge, in which I was the model student, would you say?
Bully is the word that came to mind.
Why was I a bully?
Were you largely bully, Curry, and anyone else? Did the polo incident where you had one polo left in your whole pack after giving them around the whole bus and then chuck the last one out the window instead of giving it to Corrie? That kind of thing.
Well, goes to show how much I've changed over the years. Now, it may seem very, very quiet. It's because I've come all the way to Cardiff to do this podcast and to make some internet films with Paul, which no one will ever see. And it sounds quite bad, doesn't it? Why does that sound? Why are you laughing at internet films?
Because no one uses that expression. Internet films.
Yeah, film or YouTube films.
YouTube films sounds okay.
Yeah, and if you want to see those, you can go to my YouTube channel and Marek Larwood and follow them, or watch your Spatchcock sketches.
Spatchcock sketches. Yeah.
Anyway, we're not here to talk about that, but do that anyway. We went to the cinema. I mean, first of all, I can't believe how cheap it was.
£4. Welcome to Wales.
And everywhere was almost... What's happened with the cinema pricing in Wales?
I think one of them... There was like a new independent cinema opened up, had £4 entrance, and then I think the others had to follow suit, basically. I don't understand how it's £4, but it is. At the View Cinema, it's fees all the time.
Can someone please write in and explain what the cut... Is it a percentage cut that they... Because surely if you're making... You own the film, You want them to be charging £10 if you're getting 55% of the box office, not £4.
Yeah, yeah.
Who are those Welsh pricks charging £4? I'm going to stop sending my film to Wales.
Yeah,
that's what I imagine. That's what Harvey Weinstein would say when he had a job. So we went to see Paddington 2. I was tempted to go and see Battle of the Sexes, but what I normally do is go on IMDb and look which had the better score. And Battle of the Sexes is a tennis one about Billie Jean King with Emma Stone in it. And Paddington 2 has been getting exceptional reviews, 8.3 currently on IMDb. Have you seen the first Paddington?
I have seen the first one and it was brilliant. I mean, I thought it was one of the best. Was it? No, when did it come out?
2014.
2014. I don't think I saw it in 2014. But when I saw it, I mean, it's, yeah, it's brilliant. I mean, I think just the, just really just well crafted, just really well considered, and the script was just great. And yeah.
So this was that I saw the start of Paddington and I thought, oh, it's all right, but it had good reviews. This one, it's a similar thing. It starts off, and it's a little bit like a Richard Curtis film, I suppose, where London's painted as this place where people still use red telephone boxes and everyone talks to each other and people still live in really, really pretty streets. I mean, that's exactly like that.
It's exactly how you describe it, actually. Yeah.
I think London is a shithole. I think it's a shithole and I think everyone's really rude. And this idea that London's a really friendly place, and when you watch things like Notting Hill, where it's generally, which is not a trend now, it used to be overtly white and not representational. Now it's to the point where it's trying to be PC, and you can't really. But the point is ridiculous, where it's just you see different nationalities in order, and you can't ever have a. In fact,
yeah.
It's got mental. So the story is. Paddington is now settled in with the...
Browns.
You describe the plot.
And then he wants to get a present for his aunt. Can't remember her name.
Yes, his aunt is who is still in the jungle in somewhere.
She's at like a retirement home thing for bears.
And she's basically, 100 years old.
She's 100 years old and he wants to get her a present... And it gets quite convoluted, but that's basically the MacGuffin, isn't it? That's the thing, and he has to get this present, and that kind of drives the plot, because then it gets stolen.
Yeah, so his Aunt Lucy had always wanted to come to London, but she obviously couldn't afford it because they're bears. I don't know what jobs they do.
They just seem to make marmalade, but I don't think it doesn't pay very well.
Yeah, I mean, you'd think that you'd probably be bodyguard stuff and rip people's heads off.
True.
We'll get some dancing with some Russian blokes. And they can't do that. So the fact they've outlawed bears dancing in front of Russian people, that's the whole bear economy gone. The whole bear economy is screwed. So Aunt Lucy, this is not in the film, this is just what I've
backstory.
Concluded. So Aunt Lucy has to, he's going to buy her a present and he finds a pop-up book in Gruber's store, which is on the Portobello Road, which looks a lot. What was really interesting about the Portobello Road, because I lived there and just lived near there when I first moved to London, you could really see the effect of grading in the film. When you see a place, you know quite well, and the colours look completely different. You think, oh, they pushed all the reds up.
Well,
in
they
there,
do in that film particularly, and especially the first one, they played around with the grade a lot because they. I mean, really, I mean, it's very stylized generally, but in the first one, it all goes gloomy and they literally desaturate it massively. And then when it comes back to life, it saturates massively. So I think it's all kind of hyper-real anyway, isn't it? I mean, it's that whole
world. But it's really odd when you see it. I mean,
actually, the place you know. And then,
the people who don't know what grading is, it's basically they normally shoot things and they shoot them and when they're on the film, they're quite flat, so they don't have much colour in them. And then all in post, they add the colour, so it gives you the look of the film. So Nordic Noir is a classic example of the washed-out grey look that's sort of accentuated, I suppose.
Or like The Matrix has a green cast over everything. That's another pretty recognisable one. Or
yeah. Here is my ride for the film. At the start, I thought, oh, everyone's annoying me.
I'm completely with you at that, and I think that the tweeness and the... But that's a challenge, I think, you've got with script writing, because you've got no investment at that stage, so it just... It's all payoff later on, and that's the kind of compromise I think you've got to pay. And I think it does pay off later on, but it is. I'm with you. It's like,
Yeah, the first 10 minutes, I thought I was a bit annoyed by it, until And everyone's doing, it's literally who's who in British comedy. Everyone with their cameo parts. I mean, Ben Whishaw is a really good choice of Paddington voice. He's perfect.
I think he's absolutely perfect. Yeah, I think it, yeah.
And Julie Walters in it, Hugh Bonneville, Sally Hawkins. And
people Sally Hawkins is great, I think.
People playing sort of the other parts, like Jessica Hines is Ben Miller, Sanjeev Bhaskar, Peter Capaldi, and playing people on the street. And I find them all doing slightly annoying versions of stuff they've already done until the villain of the piece comes along. And I think my acting, my love of actors has come down to two actors now. Ryan Gosling, who people know that I love, and Hugh Grant. And I love him. He's so good in this, isn't he?
He's sort of post-Hugh Grant. I mean, this is Hugh Grant almost just not taking himself seriously and just... It just looks like he's enjoying it a lot, and he's brilliant, isn't he? I mean, he's thoroughly... I mean, I think it's a good... I mean, this undoubtedly it's a good role. A hamming-up actor role is...
It's a perfect role for an actor.
It's a perfect role for an actor, generally.
And he's playing... And he's an actor who likes dressing up and disguising himself as other people and hamming things up. And he's brilliant at it. And he's brilliant at all the other parts he does as well, without sort of going into too much detail. But I think he adds more than... And there's a sort of Hugh Grantness to him, but not playing the typical Hugh Grant. Yeah, it's an extension of Hugh Grant. But he's so charismatic that every time he came on screen, I sort of laughed a lot. But this film, I thought it totally won me round. I thought it was excellent.
Yeah, I think it was... it's just really... I think particularly from the script writing point of view, I just think it's... I do script writing, and I think it's just to have it so neat, it's just really neatly constructed, and that's just a lot of time to work that out. And then the structure is, it's really intricate, because they do the family, I think they did in the first one as well. I think this idea that they've all got their kind of, I mean, it's kind of classic stuff, but they've all got their minor character flaws, and then, you know, through overcoming them, they, you know, they, that's realised in the kind of final scenes.
There were quite a lot of characters to introduce.
I think they did. I think they probably could have done with... Well, I think they kind of set themselves up a little bit too much in the first one. But I think it's brilliant. I mean, I just think in all those little motifs about the thing, like the kind of yoga bit and stuff. I mean, they did the callbacks. I mean, it's just, it becomes just more and more satisfying as the film goes on.
Yeah, there's not really much fat on it at all.
Oh, there's no fat.
All the everything that's mentioned does have a role in the film, but not so much where... you watch films and someone will just say, yes, of course, I've just started doing karate lessons, and that's one thing.
Well, yeah, no, that's
it's all sort
just
of interwoven.
Like tightly woven, because yeah, exactly that. And I thought that there were scenes like in the I'm conscious of spoilers, I don't even know when I'm saying a spoiler, I don't even know,
but a joke, something was a joke in it, sort of, that could have been a throwaway joke, and you realise that joke was there for a reason to
and
give
it feels throwaway at the time, and that's why it can feel a little bit empty at the beginning, because it just feels like they're just setting us up, there's no payoff at the beginning. And there are a lot of those things where, but when it's done really well, you don't even detect it. And I think it just did. It hides it because it just does it with such charm. And I think it was, brilliant. And by the time you get to the end, it's like it's just enormously satisfying.
You know, you're in safe hands. The whole thing's excellent. All the actors are all the main actors are really. Great in it. Who's the Brendan Gleeson's brilliant.
Brendan Gleeson's
as well.
Fantastic. I think as well, it's just a perfect match for the director.
Is Paul King.
Paul King. Now,
who directed an episode of a sketch show that I was in 8 years ago? I mean, obviously our career paths have gone different. I mean, I'm sitting in a room in Cardiff talking or making a podcast. But I mean, I suppose he wishes he could be doing this.
Yeah, yeah.
And not making a massive multi-million Hollywood success.
But saying that, before that, he did a film, Bunny and the Bull, he did, which I really thoroughly didn't enjoy. I mean, I didn't enjoy that at all. And it felt everything this wasn't, you know, it was quite, the script was kind of loose and it was just meandering. But this just felt. And I think it's the Mighty Boosh. He does the Mighty Boosh as well, doesn't it?
Yes. He did Bunny and the Bull, which had Simon Farnaby in it, who also wrote Paddington. They also wrote this Paddington 2 as well with another writer.
But it's just a perfect match, I think, because it's kind of hyper real and all that stylization. a lot of the kind of those kind of animation elements, which are a bit like,
if it's a tiny bit Wes Anderson,
it's definitely Wes Anderson. I mean, like just the palette of the like the credits and stuff. But there's a lot of that stuff and those kind of cross sectional miniatures and things like that. But I thought it's just a really good match, you know, I think for his style, because it is kind of hyper-real, and that's exactly what he did really well in, like, The Mighty Boosh.
But the details are and effort gone into each scene.
Just so much care. I just look at it and think, yeah, just...
We both said...
Hours of work, yeah.
That when you aspire to make films and you watch something rubbish, you think, oh, I could do that, and you said, yeah, when you watch something like that...
It's kind of depressing in its own right. You think you'd never... You know, it's on such a level of... So many people hitting the mark on such a level. I mean, for me, as I say, I think it's all bedded in the script. I think the script is just great. But then you build on that, then just really great casting, brilliant performances. And then, of course, just like phenomenal CGI. I mean, the bear
CGI
is just...
was absolutely brilliant. And all the artistic direction was brilliant. It was so well done. And the audience, I'd say, we were there. And there were kids there. There were pensioners there.
Yeah,
and we were there, and it was quite interesting. The reactions were.
Well, so I wanted to ask about this because I know you really don't like noise in the cinema. But for me, actually, hearing that kid—I mean, the kid was obviously a few rows from us, kind of safe distance—but I kind of liked him a couple of times. He was shouting things out, but you could clearly getting a real reaction. And even those the older people.
There were some points when they properly reacted out loud.
But I kind of felt like we were part of it together. I mean, I am normally very, you know, I like it silent, but I kind of felt like we were in it together. I always wondered how you, or did you just hate them?
Yeah, no, I didn't. Their kid, I did think, you know, what are you bringing to your kid? Literally 5 minutes after the film started, a couple came in with their kid who was just talking really loudly. And I thought, what the... And they walked with it to the... right to the front of the cinema. We were right at the back, as why. Mm-hmm. So we it wasn't too intrusive, but I just thought it was. That's a real sign of success when in a cinema where everyone was all age groups were mm-hmm. captivated and satisfied, and also please make sure you stay to the end into the credits.
Yeah.
I thought it was brilliant. I give it. I mean, how many pulls do you give it?
I was thinking about this walking back. I think I'd give it 9 paws, possibly. I think, and I probably just reserve the last paw from the fact that I think a fully satisfying film for me. Also, you know, anything it's got to say is it's these are kind of like just familiar tales of good deeds. You know, it's like a Saturday morning cartoon. And I think of a fully satisfying film it actually really challenges you, makes you think.
A 10 is absolutely blows you, for me, absolutely blows you away, and you think, I feel like I've fundamentally changed my psyche.
But you're literally almost like, you actually think about stuff different, and you're not going to get that from that kind of film. But there again, it's never, you know, it's never going to be that. But I think it was amazing. I mean, I think it was just...
I give it 9 Mareks as well. I think it's one, hands down, one of the best films of the year. And... But do you think it's better? I haven't seen the first one, but do you think it was better than the first one?
I'd say
one?
It's probably on a par, actually. I'd say they're both... And I think... And it's just really refreshing to see the fact that they didn't just cash in. I mean, they could easily have just done it, but they, you know, the same massive attention to detail, which, quite frankly,
yeah, they would have made
the same money if they hadn't.
They could have really skimped. And some of the bits of when they're... I can't say spoilers, but you just think they look beautiful. I think the effort of doing the CGI, of just doing a shot and going about the shot that way... I mean, that's, you look at things, that would have cost $100,000, $200,000.
Yeah, it's just,
you know, to do that shot.
That one cutaway,
could have gone, the studio could have said, yeah, screw that, or just we'll make more money.
But what's interesting, I wonder whether, I mean, this is probably not a rule, but I wonder whether because the CGI elements are so labour intensive that some of the script elements, they can't, you can't wing it. You know, you have to get it not locked down. And I know, when I did my film course, often the animations had much better scripts because they knew what they were playing with in terms of the time each one of those frames was going to take to work on. So they, you know, they really nailed down their scripts so they were sharp, and they never had any fat in them because they knew how much effort was going to be. You know, you wouldn't shoot an extra scene just in case with an animation. I don't know, part of me thinks that might be part of the process when you've got to animate a bear to that degree.
Well, it says, I thought it must take so long, but so the film we did, it's the 17th of October 2016 to January 2017,
and had Portobello Road on the 12th of June. Must have been all the... So, that's not that long, really. Normally it's about a year can be for doing that CGI.
There must have just a massive... Post houses just working 24 hours a day.
Well...
On for...
It's a double nine.
Double nine.
Well done, everyone involved in Paddington 2.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're going to be putting that on their posters.
Yeah.
I'm positive. All right, let's go on to this business. It's the letter section. If you want to write in, you can send a letter in. How do you do that, Paul?
You can write to filmfandango@gmail.com. Is any of that right?
No. You go to filmfandango.co.uk, click on the contact button, and write in your message. Or you can email
dearfilmfandango.com.
At the same time, you might be on the website thinking, I...
got too much cash?
Yes. I will want to...
How can I offload it?
Yeah.
Quickly?
Yes. Because having too much money makes you susceptible to...
problems in life.
Burglars.
Yep.
And... sex offenders.
Yes. That's
if you want to make sure, free yourself from the fear of some burglars and sex offenders... why not get rid of that money by donating it to go to the website, clicking donate. But up, I mean, £1,000.
Is that like the base suggested?
Would, I mean, that would definitely put off most burglars.
But if you want to be really safe,
£5,000.
You don't want to muck around with security, do you?
Yeah, let's call it £10,000. All right, thank you very much for everyone who has donated. I mean, no one's donated that much yet, but it'd be really great.
You need to start that on. Or you don't have like a Just Giving page where you have previous donations.
Yeah,
you
don't. It's not for the podcast. It's for you. Remember that. Okay, here's the letter. This is from Katie, and this is on the 17th of November, and she said hello to David, but he's gone. Hi David, Marek, Buddy, and all the minor recurring characters. I'm a bit behind on the podcast, so she doesn't even realise it yet. She's going to be devastated.
Jeez.
She'll probably stop listening by now. But you were talking about the cost of cinemas and if it's worth it. I thought I would make you aware of the Premier Cinema in Romford. That's where we went to.
Would you go to Premier, yeah.
About 20 years ago, it was an Odeon but closed down when a new, better cinema opened.
This is pretty much what happened in Cardiff.
It was left abandoned for about 15 years.
Yeah.
And then suddenly opened in this new guise. But the thing is that all tickets are £4. Of course, there's been a little refurbishment, but it's still a pretty good cinema. And if you want to go to one of the bigger releases, it makes it worth it. Also, popcorn prices are fairly cheap, so you might be happy too. Another plus is that the view in Romford has now cheap deals now to compete with it.
That's exactly what's happening.
So basically, Katie's written in, and I've not read with exactly what's happened to us, but
yeah.
The Premier must have done it all over the place then.
Well, I don't think there's that many Premiers. When I looked at the website earlier, I think there was only two.
Isn't that weird? Yeah. A weird coincidence.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And then View and then Cineworld now, as we walk past, they've gone down to £4.
Here's one from Stephen Higgins. Why don't you read this one, Paul?
Okay. Hi, new format and all format ancillaries. I'm a few weeks behind, so I'm not sure who to greet. I've just watched I Don't Feel Like Bumming in This World Anymore, or something like that.
I no longer feel in this world anymore. It's the Macon Blair.
Yeah, I quite enjoyed that. I did.
One. He also made a appearance in the Florida Project, which I watched recently. Is it Macon Blair? Yes, it is. His first directorial role. I Don't Feel at Home in This World Anymore. Sorry, Karen.
Okay. I've just watched, I Don't Feel Like Bumming in This World Anymore, or something like that. I've not gone around to this film for ages because I thought it was a totally different film to how it turned out. It was fantastic. Much like the Morgans thing, this film had an instantly forgettable title. This time, though, it seems like a great film has maybe suffered from having a complicated title. 1 to 3 words seems to be best. The Terminator, The Matrix, Blade Runner, The Bumming Man, etc. Anything over that and it just and it gets harder to remember for the average Joe. This film's great and would get at least 7 Stevens, which might even be 8 Steves, but it feels like a word-of-mouth type grower that film that needs an easy title to pass around. I foolishly got drawn into a film called Skyline because I thought it was a cool title, only to find out that it was a terrible sci-fi snorefest with the second-tier cast from 24 and Scrubs. Looks like it's getting a sequel, though. Oh, well, this was supposed to be a succinct little question about film titles, and now it's a ramble. Any films where the title is misleading or off-putting? The Accountant. I was just having that discussion with my...
The Accountant?
Dick, that's a bad film title. Keep doing whatever it is you're doing now. Sorry I'm making this very time-specific. Thank you.
I don't feel like at home in this world anymore. I think it was one of David's favourite films of the year. I gave it 7 merits when I saw it.
I didn't love it, yeah.
Tell us about The Accountant, then.
I've not seen it. I just think it's a bad title. I mean,
I couldn't think of
a worse title, in a way. I mean, I think that's kind of the point. I think, but actually,
Arbitrage was pretty. That's another sort of finance movie. Arbitrage was the Richard Gere one. I think I saw it. And it's quite boring. I mean, that's a bad title. Arbitrage. A Margin Call. Any business one. So Margin Call. Not that. It's all right. But that film is very good film with Kevin Spacey. In Dirty Bastard.
Non-friend of the show, Kevin Spacey.
Are there bad titles?
I'm trying to think. I definitely have some.
If it's the monster film, it has to be like The Terminator, The Predator, The Thing, The Blob, The Fly. You just put that in front and say what it is.
Yeah.
Superhero films, just name the superhero.
Yeah. Oh, I'm trying to think. There definitely have been some. Like, this is why some people read the emails in advance, isn't it?
Yeah. No one reads the emails in advance. What's great about it? Back to the Future is a very good title.
Back to the Future is perfect. Yeah, that's a great title.
I mean, one of the most famous ones is, we talk about the IMDb list. The Shawshank Redemption is a notoriously bad title.
That is a bad title. You're
for
right.
No one knew what it was. And only the fact it's become so famous. But everyone would... I mean, my mum getting recommended it, and no one would be the prison film, Shawshank Redemption, terrible title.
Yeah, I agree.
Normally, just say what it is. It's really simple. It's like going to a shop, isn't it? You say tomato soup. You don't want to have it red.
Red hot liquid in a
red
can.
Red liquid that you have when you're ill. I don't know if you've answered that question well.
I don't think so, actually.
That's what people like, though. They like writing in and not having fully satisfactory
answer. That's annoying, because I've definitely got some for this category.
Well, I'll read another letter.
Yeah, I'll keep
while you think. It's from Chris Dodd, pissing at the flicks. This is my kind of letter. Loving the new show and would like to suggest a new section called In the Pisser. Let me explain. Often when I come out of daytime screening, there are only a handful of people watching the film with you. And inevitably, when I got to the toilet straight afterwards, I'm joined at the urinals by someone who's been in the same screening. I then get this overriding feeling to say something about the film, since we have shared the viewing experience, and also to break the awkward silence while taking a piss. But of course, that comment needs to be short, witty, and above all, unthreatening. Here's my suggestion for a few recent films, if the film Fandangoers want to have a go. So for the film Geostorm, you could say, what a load of piss that was. For Murder on the Orient Express, you could say, can't believe I held my piss in for that shit. And for Mother, you could say, that was the biggest load of piss I've ever seen in a long time. It all depends on, of course, who is standing beside you at the urinal. Judge it carefully, filmgoers. Sometimes it may be best to keep stum. All the best, Chris.
Does it have to have... Your comment has to have piss in it, then?
Well, no, it's just something you'd say over... What would you say to someone after you saw Paddington 2?
I think just look straight ahead and just...
Or maybe you could say, do you watch a lot of kids' films? Watch... And there's no really good thing to say, is there?
I think when you... Yeah, especially coming out of the kid. I mean...
Just go to the cubicle.
And especially if a kid is next to you, then you probably just don't have that chat.
Oh, you don't talk... You definitely don't talk to anyone under 18. Or over the next urinal.
I'm just thinking about our audience. You could have a elderly gentleman to your left, a kid to your right. It's dangerous.
Yeah. I mean... We suggest that you don't speak to people at the urinal. I mean, ladies probably don't talk through the walls, do they?
No idea.
Alright, well, that's the letters section. We're going to find out about the guests, what things they like and other bits. We ask them questions about films. Here are the questions coming up. Well, listeners will be pleased to hear that because podcasts have been going on a bit long, I've abandoned the quiz this week. If you like the quiz section, please write in and I'll reinstate the quiz section. But as Paul said to me earlier, there's a lot of dead air.
The thinking's not great, time.
Who wants to listen to people think?
Not me.
Could be quite meditative, couldn't it, I suppose?
Yeah.
So instead we're going to go to your IMDb number. I'm passing over my computer now. There should really be. I mean, if someone wants to put some countdown music or some sort of mild threat music, because a lot of the time I tell people about this IMDb number, okay, and they don't know what it is.
So
I have to do this sort of.
I've got a confession. I did try to bump it up this week.
Well, what did you watch to bump it up?
Well, I've realised there's two big issues with this. One is
new film
Chaplin.
Yeah,
if you've not hit Chaplin hard, and I have, I previously hit Chaplin hard, so I get through there. But
then anime and Chaplin.
The anime, Studio Ghibli. What is it, Ghibli? Is that how you say it?
So if you got rid of Chaplin and Studio Ghibli, I think I go all the way up to 70 something, which is Dangal.
Well, that's what I was going to say. So I was.
You get some Bollywood films.
I did Grave of the Fireflies.
That is rubbish, isn't it?
Well, it's massively depressing.
Yeah, it's a nuclear war. I got a nuclear war, isn't it?
No, it's just end of the Second World War.
Oh yeah,
that was massively depressing. It
doesn't deserve to be in the top 100, does it?
So I'd literally watch that to try and clear me, and then
imagine that if it drove you to kill yourself
through playing the IMDb.
What's the number, Paul?
Sorry, I'm doing exactly the dead air thing I just said about. Jungle said, "So yeah, this is it. Blade Runner 2049. I've not seen it. Wretched. That's a new entry at 62.
Oh, yeah, that's quite high. What is it after that?
So irritated.
Is it Dango? Because
I think
that?
I could have. No, then I would have got Princess Mononoke.
Yeah.
That's another Wretched.
What's after that?
I've done Old Boy, Aliens, Witness for the Prosecution. Not done that.
I have seen Witness for the Prosecution.
Have you?
I don't think it should be in
the
top.
Oh, is that the one you said about Dangal?
Yeah, that's around 70 to me.
Yeah, that's the because I thought that was the one that was going to get you.
That has got me. So what's that on?
That's 71.
So if you get rid of Chaplin's and that's what I'm on.
Chaplin and Ghibli. That's what takes you down. But it was a new release because I couldn't watch those at home and then get it cleared. 62.
Yeah. Maybe we could watch Dangal together. That's something you could say at the urinal.
Do you fancy watching Dangle, mate?
All right, then. Okay. Well, thank you. Now we're going to talk about... We talked about not five favourite films or films, two or three films that you love that the audience might not have heard of before.
That's probably the easiest thing, because I could... Yeah, it's just things
that you think that surprised you or have influenced you and why that is. Why have they influenced you? What do you think about them? Everyone wants to know. Are you ready to talk about it?
And go. So I'm going to start with The Apartment. You've seen The Apartment, right?
This is the one when
Billy Wilder,
when what's his name, Jack Lemmon, renting out his apartment for people to get to earn more money.
To have affairs in the office.
Yeah, so he can earn more.
Earn more money
and go up the work ladder.
Yeah, I just think it's unbelievably good, and just script wise, just perfect, and. I think everything about it is just really well, and just the really great lines, just like really sharp dialogue, and
it's weird seeing Shirley MacLaine, really someone who's been in Hollywood for 50 years or something, seeing them really young and sort of foxy, and then seeing her later on in all the stuff she's been in, a sort of quite cantankerous.
But she's good. I mean, I think it's the tone thing as well. I just really like about it. I love that kind of bittersweet. it's not, you know, it's even the ending, it's always got that, and his films always have that kind of bit of it, which I find I'm just a big fan of.
1960 it was made.
And it won the Oscar, and it was, yeah, just, but it also inspired Jerry Maguire, which is another film I really like.
Oh, really?
Am I using up my numbers here?
No, 100, the apartment is 108 in the top 100
really?
Films of all time.
It should be higher than that.
Well, I only gave it 6.
You gave it 6?
Yep. I quite liked it, but I mean, I'm not a fan of the sort of snappy dialogue.
Really?
You quite like the the old style one-line quips and wise
just,
guy
it's
stuff.
Quite, just, well, it's quite, yeah, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's not entirely realistic in points and parts, but it's just really well crafted. Okay, so let's do some other ones. So that was that. Let's think some interesting ones. So Big Chill.
The Big Chill? Tell me about that, please.
I can't remember much about it. But it's lots of...
This is the Tom Berenger, Glenn Close.
Yeah, film. So basically lots of friends come together for, I think it's a funeral of a friend. And they're basically all in a house together, and it's kind of them reflecting on their lives. I think
I've never seen this.
Have you not seen it?
Got nominated for Best Picture in 1984.
I mean, it's phenomenal, yeah. I mean, it's really one of a kind as well, because it's such an ensemble film, which is quite rare, and it does work. And I
think, look at the cast. This is the cast. Incredible.
I'm just saying.
Tom Berenger, Glenn Close, Jeff Goldblum, William Hurt, underrated actor, Kevin Klein, Mary Kay plays, Meg Tilly. It's got an amazing cast.
So basically they all come together, and then it becomes this kind of reflection. I think these sometimes films hit you because they just hit you at the right time of life or something, and I think they were of the age. It's sort of people starting to have kids. They're just kind of getting into adult life, and then their friends died, and they're kind of making sense of where they all are, and they're all living in a house. They'll just come together for this funeral. And again, it's just... I mean, it's kind of... There's a British film which tried to copy it called Peter's Friends, which is...
Oh, yes, I have seen
awful.
That.
I mean, I absolutely hated that. Some people liked it. I mean, I think it's awful. But the Big Chill is, I mean, it's unique, you know.
How did you come across that then?
Do you know, I have no idea. Often I just hear people talking about them in other contexts, you know, or people.
And it's, I hear. Oh, look at those people.
And if you hear someone speaking like that, you know they've got authority.
That is a much better way of saying people.
Try it. Everyday,
I mean, you're getting insight now into the bullying of
This is we're back to the polo incident. This is a mild form.
The key to bullying: find one small weakness,
sweetness, just
one
the way
thing.
He pronounces
elevate
a word.
It into repeat it
until he leaves the podcast early.
Elevate it. Use it to break the person down.
You should do training courses. Do you want more of these?
Yeah, go on then.
That's a good one. I mean,
that's a really good one. I can't believe I've not seen The Big Chill.
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
That was, because it's only just been released when we're recording this, Matthew Skillington. It was on us, but that's one of his favourite films.
Oh, was it really?
Well.
Okay, I think that reminded me of Paddington in a way. It felt like the writer Charlie Kaufman and
Michel Gondry.
It felt like a perfect combination of kind of hyper real, and the script is just like a love it.
That was when Jim Carrey sort of breaking through. Soon we're going to do this, listeners. Soon we're going to do it. I saw a Netflix documentary called Jim and Andy, which is all about Jim Carrey's portraying Andy Kaufman in The Man on the Moon, which was made in 1997 or something like that. I'm going to do a podcast on that and talk about The Man on the Moon as well. Jim and Andy's on Netflix, and currently it may have been gone, but I think it's available for the next 20 few days. Man on the Moon is on iPlayer, I'm going to talk about both of those with someone shortly, so please watch those. Yes.
I could give some other ones. I've tried to pick some other ones. The Educators, German film. Have you seen that?
Nein, I have not seen that. What happens is, Paul, tell me immediately.
It's about a sort of rebellious group of German, how old are they? 20s, but kind of rebels. I have saw it a while ago, but I remember being absolutely... It's
Educators
with a K.
With a K, yes.
The K. And they're basically, and they take hostage this kind of business guy, and it's a It's a terrible, terrible description, but it's really good and really provocative, really interesting, and great music. It's got a really brilliant montage in there as well.
I've not heard of The Educators.
I've got it on DVD. It's really great.
It's won quite a lot of films. Nominated for the Palme d'Or and things like that.
Oh, it's just really just interesting and it just, yeah, it's great. And, yeah. Is that probably enough?
Yeah. That's great. Well, I mean, that will be enough for the podcast, do you reckon?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Is your film that you made still available? Paul made a film.
They're talking about titles.
6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah. Largely not really. I think we're trying to look at getting onto some kind of online platform at the moment. That's a.
If people want to look at your work and things like that, what do you want to do? What do they want? What do they have to do?
YouTube 33 story, YouTube thing, channel. Yeah.
And Paul's recently, well, he's made a film about making a. Can we talk about this?
Yeah.
Making a film about vlogging using 1970s. Super 8 films, and I helped him make it on the Isle of Wight, and it's a short and it's really brilliant, but when it's released I will tell the people.
Thank you very much.
And that'll be, what's your Twitter thing?
I should probably know that, shouldn't I?
At Paul Howard Allen,
is it? There we are.
There we go.
I'm a heavy Twitter user.
Not really big on self promotion.
Not huge, no.
Well, thanks for letting me come round your house.
Thank you for coming to my house.
Okay. Well, I guess I'll see you tomorrow.
Okay.
The best end to the podcast ever. Thanks for listening. And remember, everyone,
keep watching the films.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.